So welcome back to Pax Europiana and to the section about EU days. And this is again a very important and tragic day in European history. It's the EU day for the 12th of March for this terrible and tragic assassination of Zoran Cinčić, the Prime Minister of Serbia. This is really a tragic moment in European post-Cold War history. In 2003, in the streets of Belgrade, in front of his office, the Prime Minister office, the Prime Minister of Serbia, the hope of reforms and of a European Serbia, he was shot by a state employee, by a military, by a soldier, basically, of special forces, directly on the spot entering his office, yeah, in the daylight. There was there's great videos when you want to see it also, but I described you the scene. It was basically he was driving to his office, he was stepping out of the car, there was on the other side of the roof, there was this trained assassin, but this trained assassin was of the Serbian state, yeah. He was basically, he was on a regular payroll by the Serbian state special forces and the military, basically, and he shot his own prime minister. And that was, I think, one of the most shocking assassinations in European post-war history. And we in Europeans should never forget this terrible day and this terrible deed, because it really changed the course of history. Everybody in Serbian politics who afterwards took the power, you know, they were nobody was like Cinčić. Nobody was like him. Nobody really tried to be a pro-European, because they all understood why he was killed. And he was killed basically because he was too pro-European in the eyes of the Serbian security establishment. He was too compliant to the Western world, the Europeans and the Americans. He was delivering Milosevic to Den Haag. And he was also serious about the cooperation with the tribunal to clean up Serbia after all the horrors and terrors of these four wars which Milosevic did. He was serious in order to really ask for justice and allow justice to take its way. And therefore he was killed. You know, there's a lot of conspiracy and various theories which were later then invented to discredit him. Yeah, that's what obviously the same people who are also responsible for his murder, they later tried to murder his reputation again. But the reality is this was why he was killed. I will give you the timeline just as a reminder. The big events. There was the Liberation Day when NATO won and Kumanova was signed. That's the town in Macedonia where the armistice was signed and the defeat of the Yugoslavian forces. That was on the 11th of June 1999. And then obviously there started a huge series of assassinations, of political assassinations in Serbia, a kind of cleanup operation where Milosevic and his power clique tried to kill potential rivals because they understood this defeat might be the end of his power, and it was. He couldn't, he tried to kill as many of the opponents, but ultimately, and he did, you know, Stambulic was one of the most famous ones. He was his predecessor. Recently, his body was found in the forests around Belgrade. So there's, but there were several of them. Yeah? So basically, the big power struggle started immediately after the defeat. And then there was ended until the 5th of October, and that was the pro-European revolution where Milosevic was toppled. And Cinčić later, in January, became the prime minister of Serbia, and he started to really reform it. Yeah? He was trained in Germany. He is actually, he was very academically developed. Yeah, he really knew Europe. He spoke very good English, very good German. He was very, very able to be a European leader of Serbia. And I want to remind you that Serbia was not any in any moment a democracy since 1927. In 1927, there was the assassination of Radic in the parliament, the Croatian leader, in the Yugoslavian parliament in June. And then in January 1928, the king already took started whatever to end the parliamentarian democracy and created a kind of autocracy, and it stayed from that moment 28 in the beginning until the end of until this moment, until the 5th of October. Obviously, the institutions were used to autocracy and to order, in a sense, to obeying orders. And it was the first experiment for democracy, and it ended on the 12th of March in a terrible assassination. And, you know, there might be many speculations who really was behind it. If you look at the faces of this secret service, not secret service, but secret military unit, yeah, this JSO, or however you want to call it, Red Berets, or it was basically the UTBA, the military arm of the secret service in many ways. Yeah. And they always had a very dodgy relation because the Yugoslavian secret service was modeled after the KGB or the NKVD from the communist times, obviously. And it always had a very dodgy relation with criminal gangs and with the underworld. Yeah. And it was really a group that was executing all the regime opponents in Germany, in Europe. There was a lot of these killings. Yeah. And it was really a terrible kind of a unit, a tradition of political murder all over Europe, which was cultivated in that group. And this was then the paramilitary unit, or the kind of, they called it anti-terror unit, special forces, whatever the names. In fact, it was a terrorist group inside the state system. Never forget, there's one amazing documentary online. It's maybe interesting to see when they basically have financed their activities by bank robberies in Western Europe during the 70s and 80s. So they were basically hiring criminal groups. They had to self-finance them. They were then getting all the support, basically passports and fake identities in order to come back to Yugoslavia. But then they also had these missions to execute political opponents. Yeah? Some of them with link to the Croatian Ustasha, and maybe that was the self-justification. But also Albanians, also the Serbian opposition leaders, or whoever they didn't like, they sent these criminals to execute them. Yes, and this was the tradition of this secret kind of extremist political police and their henchmen. And exactly one of them was also then killing Cinčić on the 12th of March in 2003. And don't forget how it exactly was. I wanted to talk about the timeline. The 5th of October 2000, the revolution. The 25th of January 2001, the day Prime Minister Cinčić started his office. And immediately then was the big issue what to do with Milosevic. And then he was first jailed on the 1st of April 2001. And then he was brought to the Netherlands to sit justice, to face justice. And he always stayed in the Netherlands until he died. So that was basically a big crisis in Yugoslavia. That was in Serbia. That was a major step, and it was really a government crisis. Some of the less reform-oriented, a new government, they left the government. And we always have to name Mr. Kostunica in a very negative format. He played a very negative role in all these events. Yeah? And then it was also clear that then there was a mutiny, because also Cinčić complied and sent some other of these criminal gangs. They were not criminal gangs, but they were state employees. This was state-sanctioned terror groups, like you have it in Iran, this extreme brigades or whatever they are called. And he sent some of them to Den Haag. Then there was a mutiny. They mutinied. And they asked to get their kind of superiors back in power in the secret service. Cinčić, because of the blockade of Kostunica, was forced to do that. And then, but he obviously wanted to clean up the mess. He was a very pro-European Serbian leader. And then what happened is that he has then fired, in January 2003, he fired exactly this secret service agent, the leader of the Serbian secret agents. That was basically 6 weeks before he was assassinated by the very same unit. So that's the situation. That's the situation how it was. And it's now obviously, all of this was the context of the content of many court proceedings and many books and many videos. You can follow up on all of this yourself. And it was very clearly established who shot and who ordered it from the military side, obviously. But who was the ultimate political responsible? I would like to share in this context that most likely these are military organizations, in a sense. They don't act on themselves. Yeah? If you look at this this person, this famous Legia or Legia, whatever his kind of nickname is, then it was because he was also serving in the French Foreign Legion. And that was basically why he got this name. He is not a political mastermind in any context. Yeah? I mean, to take on the authority to shoot the prime minister and to plan that with your colleagues and experts inside the state military structures, yeah? You have to have the feeling that you are politically covered and this is something for the nation. You certainly have to coordinate that with somebody in politics. Yeah? I have no shadow of a doubt on that one. And, there will be maybe never the ultimate responsible found for that, but I'm confident what was the reason for it, yeah? And the reason was that Cinčić really wanted to establish a European Serbia and also accept the defeat in Kosovo, which now his big opponent already at that time, Vučić, who is now the president of Serbia, still today doesn't want to accept the defeat and the loss of Kosovo, which is absolutely reality because Kosovo is an independent republic recognized by the Western powers and around 100 countries of the world. And it is an established fact since 13 years, now in 2021. Since 2008, Kosovo has declared independence and was recognized. And basically, these two pillars, the recognition and the question of Kosovo, and also the issue of cleaning up the past. Because all these people, all these Secret Service people who were then involved in the killing and assassination of Zoran Cinčić, they were the perpetrators of exactly all these crimes in Kosovo I was talking in the previous podcast about, and before in Bosnia, and before in Croatia. They had already a decade of killing behind them. So obviously they were not afraid to kill further because also the same people were doing the political murders for Milosevic in the year 2000, in 99 and 2000. The political killing where the most famous case is, of course, Stambolic, who was the predecessor of Milosevic and who was killed in 2000. So here we are in this kind of mess we are. And where, please, is the cleaning of the past, this kind of working on the past crimes in Serbia? And this, of course, this case, yes. And Zoran Cinčić's case, there's a lot of court proceedings, yeah. There's people in prison for it. But the whole background that it was about Kosovo, that it was about the war crimes, yeah. Here we have Vučić in power, who is obviously always attending every year. That's now a big ceremony in the Serbian political life to have this day for Zoran Cinčić and also to commemorate his work. And he has his own foundation. And he is now, of course, part of the Valhalla of Serbian politics. Yeah? So that's not a problem in the sense. Yeah? But the problem is that the whole context of what led to his death and what led to his assassination. It's not connected with, later they said, the mafia gangs and so. That were was links, obviously, within the security service, which were very criminal organizations in reality, and the organized criminality, that this was the same family members or they were friends with each other, and they mutually coordinated and cooperated. And there is no doubt about it, because it has to be understood that this was already the case, this close cooperation with the underworld and with the criminal gangs of Serbia. That was already the working methods of the UTPA, of the Yugoslavian Secret Service, and that has gone to unprecedented levels in the case of the Bosnian, Croatian, and later Kosovo War, but also in this time of the sanctions. because there was a relatively strict sanction regime against Milosevic in place between 92 and 96. And obviously, it has deprived the access of petroleum, cigarettes, and everything else, also weapons, obviously. They were not allowed to go into Yugoslavia. I mean, weapons they had produced themselves, but they needed petrol, obviously. They needed fruits, cigarettes, and all these things. And this was all coming either from Macedonia, Thessaloniki, or through Albania, Durres, to Montenegro. And this was a huge, huge smuggling operation. If you want to supply a whole country, that's, of course, a lot of logistics which you have to do in this kind of wilder 90s after the transition. And that was basically the thing to do in Macedonia and in Albania. And basically, this is how it happened. And all these kind of state-owned companies, yeah, the military security complex and the smuggling groups, yeah, they somehow coordinated and backed each other off. Always in the name that the West is unfair, the boycott is unfair, they don't understand that we just want to liberate, in their view, in Bosnia, and so on and so on. And they felt fully justified to do all this. And in the whole transport, obviously, it was great business to also transport cocaine and other narcotica. And so these criminal networks and the security apparatus, and obviously the customs service, which you need in order to legitimize this all, they were working hand in hand for these sanctions. And when the sanctions were over in 96, when the Bosnian War was over, then obviously they were all great friends and had made huge fortunes in this time. Additionally, obviously, the control of the state-owned companies was giving them also significant resource power. And this is what they exploited to the maximum. And then with cleaning up operations by Cinčić, obviously, they felt threatened that their great business model of collusion, corruption, exploitation, extortion, and smuggling is then no longer. And then they were thinking, oh, what will we do? Some serious normal work? No. And so it happened. And so the whole tragedy started. And to this day, and this is actually the issue on this 12th of March, yeah, we should really think about European Serbia and ask all these questions with the Serbian responsibility, with the Serbian political elite and the public and the media. Because to this day, and the confession and the acceptance of guilt of the Serbian elite, yeah, and of the Milosevic criminal regime, and of Yugoslavia in principle, the suppression of minorities, the crimes in Bosnia, the crimes in Kosovo, the aggressive war against Croatia, they are not so well regretted in many ways. Yeah? And the contrition level is minimal in the public. Yeah? I mean, Vucic goes here and says Rajak was a fantasy and his Srebrenica controversy is well documented. And so on and so on. And the justice of for many of the people committing crimes in Serbia and in Bosnia is not done in Belgrade. And to this day, you know, the whole link between the organized criminality, the state cooperation sector, and the collusiveness in this sector is not investigated to a satisfactory level. And that's, I think, very worrying. And then some people tell me, and this is the EU official position of some of the commissioners, that Serbia is a front runner. And it's not a joke, but I always say the running to a front, or what is the idea? I mean, no, that's not funny, actually. I'm sorry. But, you know, I don't want to belittle it, but the point is that countries who have done in their names this kind of level of criminality, internally and externally, because it's not only the export of criminality and aggression in the wars, yeah, but also this kind of internal feuding resulting in the assassination of the highest representative of the state by its own security organs. This is so, man, and you see, this is a fact. Yeah? There is nothing to be changed. We just don't know who ultimately ordered it. Yeah, but we all know that it was the head of the secret service paramilitary troop or military group. Yeah? I mean, then this is all so worrying. And then some people say we need Serbia. Serbia is so well developed. It's such a wonderful investment location. It has to be the front runner in the EU accession. I think step by step, it's first the NATO countries, Albania, North Macedonia and Montenegro are much more advanced. They have discussed about the past, and anyhow they have not committed any comparable sins. You need to be also morally ready for the European Union, because we are a union of values. We are a union of principles. We are not just, you know, to fulfill the standards of some consumer protection law. No, no, it is very important. You know, Germany could have never joined the EU without Adenauer and all his level of contrition and repentance. And he was in basically house arrest during the Third Reich. So the situation is that when people like Vučić in power now, then they have to show a total different level of apology and excuse for the past crimes. Because he was an actor already at that time. He was Milosevic information minister. He was also political actor for Greater Serbia in Bosnia and in Kosovo as well. Let's never forget that. And when he goes through Europe and gives his perspective of the past of Yugoslavia and of the wars in the Balkans and distorts the facts and the past, is completely unacceptable. And yeah, anyhow, Zoran Cinjic, I actually met him myself twice, yeah, in Belgrade, and once in Vienna, twice in Belgrade, and once in maybe three times, I don't remember now exactly. I liked him very much. He was a very nice person. He was always smiling, and he was a very nice gentleman. Yeah? He understood Europe, and he was endorsed and supported by Europe. It's a tragedy that he died on that day. I feel still today very sorry. And the thing is, I think to come up to his legacy and to live up to what he wanted to achieve for his people and for his nation, and for the whole of Europe, I think he wanted to have a European Serbia. And I think we all should work for that. But the European Serbia he wanted is a Serbia that can say sorry, that understands it wants to have good neighborly relation with Bosnia, with Montenegro, with Kosovo, with Croatia, with Romania, with everybody, yeah? And also with Macedonia. And this is a Serbia which is a real European society, which breaks its kind of traditional nostalgic link with autocracy from Russia, and is really joining the Western world fully by repenting its past sins, by understanding what went wrong philosophically and what kind of terrible atrocities were done. And this dialogue must be led in Serbia. And it's the 12th of March, which should always remind every Serbian decision maker in media, academia, in the public, to lead this dialogue with the population, to present the facts of the crimes, they are all very well established, and discuss every single day, like we did it in Austria after Waldheim, like in Germany it was done also, I think, intensively even before, with the help of the Americans. Such a dialogue must be led now with the Serbian people in order to prepare them for NATO membership and for EU accession. And then European Serbia of the dreams and vision of Zoran Cinjic can be fulfilled, and Serbia will be a good and strong member of NATO and a strong and good and successful member of the European Union. It's a great place with a great people, but these visions of greater Serbia have poisoned the mind of many people, unfortunately, and led them to toxic and dangerous and terrible atrocities. And people can improve, you know, you can overcome the past, yeah? But you have to be honest with yourself. You have to repent them and by the facts, yeah? That's the only way to overcome the past, yeah? If you somehow try to dodge your way out like Austria did after the Second World War and blame it all on the Germans and show no contrition but just shift the position and say it was not us, it was before, we are not responsible, then you cannot be a European nation and not a member of the European Union. This process has to happen, and it's very important. And all Europeans who want to help European Serbia, and I think that's everybody, because it's really a wonderful European people with a great European future. But everybody who wants to help them, you need to discuss with the decision makers about this, yeah? not to be blinded by the glory of Belgrade and say it's a front runner because it has adopted 3-4 regulations. No, no, no. The crimes in Bosnia, the crimes in Kosovo, the crimes against Croatia, the crimes against Slovenia, this is the thing which have to be discussed. And also the whole idea that Yugoslavia was somehow good. Yeah, this concept of Yugo-nostalgia must be defeated. This must be defeated. Tito was no good man. Milosevic was a terrorist, a butcher and a killer. And he killed many Serbs. So many Serbs were the victims. And everybody else as well. Yeah, but make it very clear. That also, he was the killer of Serbians. Yeah, and this must be very clear. He killed all these people. And ultimately, his clique around him, and maybe others as well, is also responsible for this most terrible and heinous crime to kill Jovan Cinjic on the 12th of March 2003. May this day live in infamy, but may this day also remind everybody that from this most terrible moment, there is maybe also the hope for a real European Serbia one day. I hope for it. I believe in it. I work for it. But it needs a lot of work internally still to be ready for Europe. Okay, never forget the 12th of March.